It's Wednesday, which means it's Big News Wednesday with Big J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going?
It's going. Today, temporarily, we're changing Big News Wednesday to Severe Stomach Pain Wednesday.
Yes. So JR is very tapped into what's going on across the country, and the news is just pretty dark, and it's just roiled his stomach. And so I get that. I apologize for how the news has hit you.
I can't handle it, bro. It's like, you know, sometimes you need a break, you know? So yeah, we'll see.
Well, we'll give you a break at some point through the course of this 90 minutes of not break. Look, some of this news is fun. Some of it's really creepy and weird. I'm gonna see if indeed laughter is the second best medicine, and a good chat about politics with a bud is in fact the best medicine. We're gonna find out together. So if you're feeling bad out there, you're now part of my medical experiment. I apologize for violating your HIPAA rights. Okay, so anyway, thank you all for being here. We do indeed have an absolutely packed big fat news Wednesday here for you. Too much to talk about, from political violence to Roger Stone's reproductive fluids to guns. There's just too much, and we're gonna try to get through as much of it as we can to inflict on you what we've had to process this morning. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that'd be great. You can send us messages, tweets, comments, super chats, all that, and we will go into response mode in just a little bit. But with all that said, JR, are you ready to talk about some stuff?
I am. I got my home remedy ready for me. It's a new Skittle, just so you guys know. We'll be detailing this later. We'll detail it later.
Okay, later. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad that you you're going easy on your stomach. Skittles for breakfast. That's what the doctor ordered. I don't think that doctor got his degree from a reputable university. Anyway.
But he's gonna run for Congress.
That's true, and he will definitely make it. Okay, I will find out more about that candy in our first break. But for now, let's jump into this. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez continues to own the horrendous troglodyte Paul Gosar on her Instagram. In response to how do you feel about Gosar's post, she wrote, "That man couldn't add two single digits together if he tried," which I love. I need more of that in my life. She expounded on this on Twitter, saying, "See, the thing about me is that I will 100% bulldog back a bully. Ask any Republican I serve on a committee with. When I was first elected, they tried to harp on me and I absolutely handed it to them. Now they don't. Plus, it's true, Gosar has nothing but tumbleweeds up there." Now look, I like this. What I would prefer is a government that isn't full of people who tease political violence as a stand-in for actually representing their constituents, instead just getting them to believe that all you need are threats of violence against those that you despise. But we're not gonna have that anytime soon. So I do like that we have fighters, that AOC, despite the constant threats to her life, fights back against them and tries to have a little bit of fun with what is on many levels not a very fun situation, JR.
Yeah, what works well here is that AOC kind of doesn't care. And this is the main thing that separates her from many other, especially establishment Democrats, who wanna fight, even not even like fighting with, as far as pushing back on someone saying ridiculous things like what Paul Gosar says and Matt Gaetz says and Marjorie Taylor Greene says, but actually fighting back with policy. And then when they come and attack her because of her policy position, she also has this ability to then come for their throat, which is awesome. Now, by the way, I'm sure there's many people who are in support of the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world who are like, she's just like her. She's just a left-wing AOC. I mean, she's a left-wing Boebert. She's in a left-wing MTG, all that, right? But the difference here is they come and attack because they have no policy positions, and they need to make sure that their supporters are ginned up on some kind of anger that's based in nothing. AOC is trying to do something for her constituents. Then they attack her on these baseless things, and she's not too afraid to just say, "Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. These conservatives are gonna be upset with me. Oh, I'm sorry. The voters are gonna be upset with me." The way many other politicians have this weird fear of people who kind of don't pay that much attention to anything except for what their particular hero is telling them to pay attention to. So it's layered and it's different. So I just want to point out the difference between the way she fights back, and she'll say some outsider, outlandish type of things that maybe you wouldn't see a politician say, versus someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene who just attacks baselessly.
Yeah. And has nothing behind it, no knowledge, except the knowledge that her base doesn't expect her to have any knowledge, which is comforting if you're completely ignorant. Now, others are worried about this as well. I want to read just a tweet from Dr. Joanne Freeman, who wrote, "Threats of violence lead to actual violence. They clear the ground, they cow opposition, they plant the idea, they normalize it, they encourage it, they maim democracy and run the risk of killing it." Now, based on the CV, Dr. Joanne Freeman might know something about this. She is a Yale historian and the author of the book, The Field of Blood, Violence in Congress and the Road to Civil War. So we're reaching out to the doctor to bring her on. But look, I do think that we should be worried about this. And we kind of need to, because people in a position of power to do something about it aren't. The Wall Street Journal reached out to Kevin McCarthy's office and he did not respond to a request for comment. I mean, why would he? Like, come on, I'm not gonna be responsible. I'm only the leader of the party of personal responsibility.
Well, Donald Trump hasn't told him to do anything about it yet, so he's not gonna do anything about it.
Totally. It's as simple as that. JR is 100% accurate.
Because I mean, think about the other things. When he made sure he did something about Liz Cheney, you know, or made sure that she's off these committee assignments. All those things are because Donald Trump was telling him to. Not because he's actually very, maybe he was upset about it, but he was only upset about it because it brought the ire of Donald Trump on his back. Then he had to do something. That was what his anger was over her.
100%. Now, Paul Gosar has responded, wrote this like letter. Want to be very clear that while there is like a line in it that seems to imply that he doesn't like political violence, if you read the entire thing, and we're going to read some sections from it, it's pretty clear what the point of this is. This is not a representation that he's feeling the heat and needs to respond. This is him again trying to tell the base that he wants, the base of the Republican Party, which has very little substance that they desire. They do need it, they're not getting it. This is what he said. "I do not espouse violence or harm towards any member of Congress or Mr. Biden. The video depicts the fight taking place next week on the House floor and symbolizes the battle for the soul of America when Congress takes up Mr. Biden's massive $4 trillion spending bill that doesn't even exist. That includes amnesty for millions of illegal aliens already in our country and was not meant to depict any harm or violence against anyone portrayed in the anime. So it symbolizes the battle for the soul of America." Which makes sense. That's why he and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene are murdering a specific member of the party who's not in leadership. She's not the president, the vice president. She's just one that they know their base loves to imagine either traditional physical or sexual violence against. That's why he did it. And shows migrants as this horde covered in blood that's coming for America. It's symbolism. That's what it is, JR.
It's just the opportunity to tell people what they should be afraid of in ways that they can do something about it. Now, you know, he can point out how he had no actual reason to believe, or for people to believe him, that this is actual violence. You know, this, you know, where this is a symbolic thing. You know, Kathy Griffin did a symbolic thing at the beginning of Trump's 4 years, and. Let's talk cancel culture, shall we? Have you heard from Kathy Griffin? Do you think it was the radical left that canceled Kathy Griffin? Maybe partially because they're so afraid of conservatives talking trash about them or saying that they're acceptance of this woman who wants to execute the president. Isn't it just symbolic? So by the way, it was bloody. Yes, it was graphic. And yes, it could tell people, oh, I'd love to imagine that. And that's the reason for probably not to do it. But for some reason, the consequences and punishment only come to one side. It's really weird how that works.
It's so weird. And let's point out, as we have many times, Kathy Griffin was not a representative of anything other than Kathy Griffin. And if she had been in Congress, they would have yeeted her into the orbit of Jupiter. Like she would not have been around for 5 minutes. She would be like reading the controversy beginning on Twitter and they'd already be putting a black bag over her and Nancy Pelosi would be tightening it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and when you anyway. Say they, you mean conservatives and Democrats.
Yes. And Democrats, 100%. Now, I wanna give you a little bit more of this because that first bit was saying he doesn't espouse violence or harm when that's what he's describing. And we know why he's doing that. Then it pretends it's symbolic. Then he says this, "A chaotic and lawless wind is blowing across our land." I'm gonna stop there for a sec. We'll read the rest in a sec. If a politician ever talks like that to you, you should be incredibly suspicious of what they're actually trying to accomplish. It says, because of Joe Biden's open border policies, our southern border is being invaded by illegal aliens. 2.3 million lawbreakers will pour into the United States this year. Our country is suffering from a plague of illegal immigration. Okay, so He is, first of all, Joe Biden doesn't have an open border policy. He has continued many of the exact same border policies as Donald Trump. Perhaps because he actually likes them, perhaps because he thought the right would give him credit. And if he thought that second thing, goddamn, Joe Biden is stupid. But he doesn't espouse violence or harm. He's just telling you about how there's a chaotic and lawless wind blowing across our country. We're being invaded. Lawbreakers are pouring into our country, and there's a plague of illegal immigration. So these are not humans. They're either liquid or a disease or an invading army. But whatever it is, do not ever think about them as human beings. And so when you literally dehumanize, whether as an invading force or a fluid or a virus, what is the end goal of dehumanizing an entire people? It's not empathy. It's not understanding. It's not just symbolic and it's about policy and all that. No, it is to get people to be okay with violence. That's the point of it.
Of course, it's exactly what it is. But no, we're going to get to more of what he said as far as how that works. But so you got this lawless wind blowing across the country. It's amazing. What the F does that have to do with this video that you put up? What is the lawlessness and the plague and the illegal immigrants pouring across the border? Which part of your video is going to get that to stop? What does your video have to do with you being a lawmaker? You said there's lawless wind. Hey, what policies are you going to put in place, lawmaker, to stop this lawless wind? Or are you going to make a bunch of videos that incite people to violence? Which one is it? Because you know, you're in a position where you can be a part of changing something.
Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. So he concludes sort of by saying, it is a symbolic cartoon. It is not real life. Congressman Gosar cannot fly. The hero of the cartoon goes after the monster, the policy monster of open borders. And I saw that and I thought, well, you know, I care about symbolism and I don't want to make sure that I'm not misreading this. So I went back to the video and I moved frame by frame. And when he kills the monster, I looked, he hadn't put legislation on its face. For some reason, he'd chosen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is not in charge of US border policy, did not write the reconciliation bill. They chose a woman of color that they know their base despises to have him symbolically murder because that's what they want. All of this is nonsense. And by the way, even if this wasn't complete dog crap, millions of people saw his video and loved it, got off on the murder of women of color. How many of his constituents are going to see, let alone read this? Do you think it's going to be 3 million people? I don't think it's going to be 3 million people. I think it's going to be significantly less than that.
Paul Gosar said, it's not real life. Congressman can't fly. It's weird because we may have, for some reason, this confusion as to why your supporters may think Paul Gosar can fly or may think that this is real life because they also think Donald Trump won the election in 2020, also not real life. They also think that in January 6th, somehow it was Trump supporters, then it transitioned over into Antifa, then it transitioned over into Nancy Pelosi inviting them in, then it transitioned over into everyone attacking conservatives. Which one is it? Hey, you might make us wonder why you do things like this that aren't real life, but your supporters will think are real life. Maybe because you have a track record for telling supporters things that aren't real life are real life and they believe it. It's weird.
That makes sense to me. Okay, let's turn to another unfortunate angle on this. Let's talk about how the mainstream media helps to police certain types of actions and give a pass to others. And it seems to always inevitably crack down on progressives, regardless of how light it is that what they're doing. And political violence, I mean, is that even something worth talking about? So as always, Media Matters continues to do great work in this area. And they have totaled up coverage of Paul Gosar showing this video of him murdering AOC. CNN covered it for 15 minutes in 6 segments. MSNBC covered it for 21 minutes in 3 segments. And Fox News, they couldn't find 1 second to show you Gosar murdering someone. So the right is happy to have the video. They spread it like wildfire on social media. But actually covering it, then you have to take a stance on whether we should be showing ourselves murdering women of color. So they just don't do it. It's not a news network. That's not what it is. They just provide a safe space for the right to never have to question their worst inclinations. And that's what they've done. And by the way, we showed you the numbers for CNN and MSNBC, and they did cover it. That's good, right? Okay. But compared to what? The time that they put into it. Because just a couple of years ago, Rashida Tlaib swore. Remember, she went to this meeting and she swore. Okay. CNN covered that for 1 hour, 4 minutes, 50 seconds. MSNBC for almost 38 minutes. And Fox News, of course, found almost a full hour to talk about that. All of them far more than the video of Paul Gosar killing AOC and then moving in to kill Joe Biden. So again, they find time for what they want to talk about. I mean, after all, during that time when Fox News didn't even mention Gosar, they talked for 30 minutes about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez using the word woke in a tweet. So they found a half an hour to talk about AOC on the day she had been described being murdered, and just it didn't come up. It just, we didn't have time to talk about that. We had to talk about wokeness and the wokers and the wokies and how they're ruining America.
There, well, okay. I always wonder, we always say stuff like this, like how much is news media when they cover stories like this, how much are they like afraid of a conservative pushback, or are they just kind of on board? It's this, I don't care what part of the political aisle many people fall on, even when it comes to media figures or who they think is the most influential. It's just, they don't take them seriously when they have these threats. And again, it's part of why January 6th happened to the extent that it did. People who take them seriously watched that whole buildup for weeks and said, yeah, something bad is going to happen. And they were pushed aside as, oh, you're overreacting. These people are just people. They're just patriots. They're just coming here to do this and that. So if that's what our narrative has been on these folks, yeah, every next step you take, it emboldens them to do it more. There's one thing that they do like to say all the time is that, you know, if you, as long as you jail and punish the criminals, it'll possibly be a crime deterrent.
Yeah.
They're right to an extent, because their people never get punished and they get more and more emboldened. There's a reason why Paul Gosar thinks he can continue to do this, is because he's never been told to stop doing this.
Yeah. And he's being reinforced in that right now by the lack of reaction from the right. Okay, with that, someone is responding to Paul Gosar though. Let's jump right into this video.
Proximity to this sociopath who has been elected from a very gerrymandered district. There is no other way that someone like Paul wins without that. He is incompetent. It is obvious. I'm not speaking in sort of like half nuances here. The dude is obviously incompetent.
So that is the sister of Paul Gosar talking about Paul Gosar, describing him as an incompetent sociopath. And she did have more to say about him. Here's a little bit more of her commentary.
Allison, it definitely is getting worse because no one holds him accountable. Not Kevin McCarthy, not Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, not Senate Leader Chuck Schumer, not Speaker Nancy Pelosi, not Attorney General Merrick Garland. No one holds him accountable. And that, this is something that I have to openly wonder, does he have to act on it himself before we believe that he is an absolute, he's a sociopath? And what's more, we know from everything we have seen, and certainly Attorney General Garland has seen much more of it than I, that there is evidence to show he was in a conspiracy to commit treason against the United States of America. Where is the accountability?
And there she is referencing the fact that he apparently was involved in some of the planning on January 6th. So again, he never encouraged violence. He just helped to plan the event where all the violence happened. I'm glad that Jared, that the family continues to speak out about him. We might show that old ad, but they've been some of the harshest critics of this absolute monster.
Yeah, I'm not sure why this disgruntled sister is speaking out about Paul Gosar. I mean, she must be like mad about him stealing her toys at 10 years old or something. There's always some excuse like that whenever an employee may point out, or a former staff or someone who worked with a politician will point out things they did. Oh, it's a disgruntled employee. Just write it off. So the sister who knows her brother, are you gonna listen to her?
Yeah.
Sure.
No, and look, by the way, you don't have to take on faith what, you know, a sibling says. And by the way, siblings can disagree. I disagree with both of my brothers, but like if they ran for office, I'd be like, okay, I'm not gonna make an ad like condemning them just because we disagree. It takes a lot. And especially each extra family member Like that takes a little bit more. Actually, can we jump ahead? I want to show you this ad because the family did try to warn us in one of the most amazing political ads, other than the Demon Sheep ad. Google it. This is one of the most impressive political ads I've ever seen. Here is what the family tried to do to stop him from becoming a congressman in the first place.
My name is Tim Gosar.
David Gosar.
Grace Gosar. Joan Gosar.
Gaston Gosar.
Jennifer Gosar.
Paul Gosar is my brother.
My brother.
And I endorse Dr. Brill.
Dr. Brill.
Wholeheartedly endorse Dr. David Brill for Congress.
I'm Dr. David Brill, and I approve this message.
Yeah, I bet you do. Mm-hmm. I love he's like, what I've got. Now, the joke unfortunately was on, I was going to say him. I guess it was more on us. Dr. David Brill lost. And now Paul Gosar is there. His family, his whole family tried to stop him, but it is an incredibly gerrymandered district. As the sister was referring to there.
Yeah, the Gosars, they have a serious common face. It's like the genes are strong in that family. All of them look exactly the same. It's just the way it is. Well, you know, outside of that, that distracted me because every sibling was the same. Exact face, just with hair different.
Yeah. And they agreed on one other. Would they agree on two things? A face should look like this, and Paul Gosar's a sociopath. Also, he's incompetent because apparently being a sociopath isn't bad enough. You also have to be incompetent. Except neither of those matter if you're in a gerrymandered district. If you can reliably get elected, regardless of what the other side puts forth. So, the joke is on us. It might be very difficult to get this guy out of office, and as long as he's in office. He's going to be encouraging people to view individual representatives and entire groups of people in a dehumanized fashion, and to believe that violence could be the solution.
The great question to ask anyone who wants to vote for Paul Gosar again is, what policy do you support? Now you may say he's talking about illegal immigration. What policy? Because that's not a policy. That's a complaint.
Yeah, I assume none. I assume none policy. No immigrants whatsoever. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take our first break. We come back. We got a lot to cover in terms of legal threats to not just Donald Trump, but his entire circle, basically, as well as an awesome question to Nancy Pelosi at COP26. We got a lot to look forward to after this. Okay, everybody. Buckle up, hold on to your butts. We got a legal roundup for you, which Norma, our graphics designer, was very impressed with the title of this block. But I swear the content is better than the title. Let's jump into this video.
The House Select Committee, January 6th, committee subpoenaed you and some other former Trump officials today. What are you going to do in response?
Well, I haven't received any documents, Laura, or any communication at all. But what I'll say is this. It's living through those disastrous results.
You're not going to be.
And this is just one more attempt to change the subject.
Yeah, you're not going to be showing up to testify in this so-called select committee.
First, I don't even have the documents, Laura.
Yeah, well.
I'm experiencing human joy as I broadcast from what looks like a creepy graveyard. Did you notice that background? That was a graveyard, wasn't it? I think. Like they're like, hey, Steven, she's ready to film. And he just like went upright from his grave and they turned on the camera. I'm pretty sure that is a graveyard that he is in.
Halloween vibes, bro. Halloween.
Halloween vibes, exactly. He can't afford anything other than that. Remember when he had the fake hairline that he spray painted on his forehead? Anyway, the things we just talked about are literally the least concerning things about him. Like pretending that this is a so-called select committee. Yeah, I'm sure that that's consistent. She believes that these select committees are all fake and you don't need to. And by the way, she's like, she's pretending for him right there. She's like, you're not gonna do that. He didn't say that. We cut out the middle because it was BS that had nothing to do with what he was being asked about. He was asked a specific question. He's like, I don't even have the documents. But what I will say is something else that has nothing to do with that. And then she asked again, he said, but I don't even have the documents. That's not what you were being asked. You're being asked about whether you will abide by the subpoena, and he refused to answer it. Now, we can debate what exactly that means, but it's very clear that he didn't want to give a firm answer about whether he's going to comply with it or not. That's my read anyway, JR.
And she said, as he wasn't saying anything, so that's a no. Because that's the answer she was looking for, because she knows you can be that blatant and that in opposition to the law. and get away with it. It's perfectly fine. That's what she was looking for. She's like, well, she's probably a little frustrated he didn't answer the question, because that's something she wanted for the show. And of course, he's not going to feel any issues for it. We know what's happening with Steve Bannon right now, which I think you might get to. But that's why he's saying it like this. By the way, last useless point about the zombie there. He kind of looks like a half-eaten blow pop. You know, when like the candy's almost gone and there's a little bit of the pink gum sticking out of the top. So it's like red here and then pink on the top. See the gum sticking out on his forehead?
That is true. That is true. Yeah. No, he's an awful human being. And, you know, I guess like reality is serving as the portrait in the attic. And anyway, okay, so he has been subpoenaed though. And others have as well. The January 6th committee tweeted that they've issued subpoenas to 10 former administration officials. And that's interesting. You know, you got Stephen Miller. Let's see, who Representative Benny Thompson said had, quote, participated in efforts to spread false information about alleged voter fraud. Kayleigh McEnany as well, who the committee said was present at times with Trump as he watched the insurrection and spoke at a rally that morning. She could provide good information. You've got Bill Stepien, manager of the 2020 reelection campaign. Jason Miller, senior advisor, who just yesterday was on a QAnon show. John Eastman, Michael Flynn, you got a whole bunch of people. Here's the issue though. Steve Bannon was subpoenaed, and what's going on with that? The DOJ isn't enforcing it, so what's the difference if you have these 10? If the DOJ isn't doing anything, if Merrick Garland, it turns out, is not actually Thor, our great warrior and defender, well, then what's the difference? You can subpoena everybody you want. You can subpoena Big Bird. He's been in the news recently. I don't think that bird is showing up.
It's a shame because I don't know if this is, and I was thinking I was going to bring this up, of course, how Merrick Garland hasn't done anything. So what's the point here? Now, they made sure that they characterize Merrick Garland as this overreaching illegal Department of Justice head, right? And I don't know if that affects these guys, if they listen and go, well, I don't make sure I don't look like that, or if there's something else that's telling him to not do this. Because again, as we mentioned in a previous story, hey, they know and they believe in order to keep people from committing more crimes or to have a crime deterrent, you're gonna have to go after the guy who's thumbing his nose at you. If you don't do it, the rest of them will say, as Laura Ingraham asked Miller, so you're not gonna do it, right? The Democrats aren't doing anything about it. Why would you do anything? Why would you comply? Yeah. That's where we are.
Yeah, and so that's their defense. He has two forms of defense against the subpoena: Merrick Garland not doing anything, and a false belief that graveyards are hallowed ground and the DOJ can't tread on it. But I would like to at least test that second one. Can you haul someone out of a graveyard? I want to know. Anyway, so all of this is neutral news. We have some bad news for the Trump administration. Last night, a federal judge denied Trump's request to keep the public from seeing what he did leading up to and on January 6th. This is US District Judge Tanya Chutkan, who said the former president's records, which are held by the National Archives, can be released to the panel, citing the public interest in understanding what caused the Capitol riots and preventing such events from happening in the future, which seems reasonable. That could include 800 pages of call and visitor logs, draft speeches, talking points, and memos with possible legal strategies. The fact that they wanted to keep their speech drafts from coming out is so highly suspicious. What could possibly be in that that you wouldn't want us to see? Maybe we'll find out. By the way, there was a line in the judge's ruling that said, presidents are not kings and plaintiff is not president, which a lot of people got a lot of joy out of that. I got a little bit too. The issue though is, How many times have we been through something like this on the tax returns or whatever? There's always some other judge and there's always another iteration. Let's just go another time around the loop to loop on this.
There's a new delay.
Maybe they'll have it.
If nothing else, more delays. Maybe you'll forget about it. At least it'll be out of a general political news from people to understand what's happening and see it. If nothing else, it's that. But other than that, it's just to stretch it out and see how much pressure they can put on the folks who are supposed to do their job. And so far, yeah. I don't know. We'll see how much it works.
We'll see. I guess if the theme of the show right now is like accountability doesn't really matter, even when it's ostensibly there, we have a great example of that for you. And it is the Hatch Act, which is one of my favorite jokes about politics, actually, is the Hatch Act. So a bunch of Trump administration officials have been found to have violated it. 13, in fact. It had to be some kind of unholy number. So the Office of the Special Counsel says that senior Trump administration officials chose to use their official authority, not for the legitimate functions of the government, but to promote the reelection of President Trump in violation of the law. They said that they purposefully violated the law prohibiting political activity during the final few weeks of the administration when they knew that this Office of Special Counsel would not have time to investigate and issue findings before Election Day. This includes a lot of people. Some noteworthy ones are Kellyanne Conway, you've got Jared Kushner, Hayley McEnany, Mark Meadows, Stephen Miller, Mike Pompeo, Chad Wolf, basically everyone. And yes, they were using their official positions to do two things, to get Trump reelected and to stuff their pockets. That's what they did. And they didn't just do it in the weeks leading up to the election. They did it for literally years. And they violated it. So they're gonna go to jail? They're gonna pay a massive fine? Is literally anything gonna happen? Are they gonna have to write, "I will not violate the Hatch Act" on a blackboard 50 times? Like, I don't think anything is gonna happen as a result of this.
It's gotta be
be surprised.
It's gotta be the least thoughtful thing that they've got in their mind as they go through this whole thing. Again, let's not forget, but just earlier we talked about Paul Gosar, and his line was, "We've got chaos and lawlessness pouring throughout the country, rolling through the country. This looks like lawlessness to me. Are we gonna do something about that?" No, lawlessness is only characterized for the people that are not in power, for people that look different than you, that we've already demonized to a point that you can just go, "Yeah, I see them, lawlessness." These folks who you just listed, no, come on, they're Trump people. They're not lawless, despite what the law says.
I know. And look, this, so like there's two levels of bad things that can happen as a result of this. One is that the prohibition, which is just a tradition at this point, because the Hatch Act doesn't matter, of not using the office to just benefit yourself gets broken down entirely even more. But I don't even know if that's gonna happen. I mean, certainly it does happen under Dems, but it's probably just gonna continue to be this thing where Republicans use their office to stay in office and Dems just allow it and don't do anything. Pathetic. But anyway, we got more pathetic for you. Why don't we jump over to COP26 and have a little bit of fun with our climate or what's left of it. Journalist Abby Martin had a great question for Speaker Nancy Pelosi at COP26 about emissions, which ones we're focusing on and which we're not. Take a listen to this.
Wait a minute, I want a woman. Yeah. Gender equality here. Maybe I don't, but.
Abby Martin with the Empire Files. Speaker Pelosi, you just presided over a large increase in the Pentagon budget. This Pentagon budget is already massive. The Pentagon is a larger polluter than 140 countries combined. How can we seriously talk about net zero if there is this bipartisan consensus to constantly expand this large contributor to climate change, which is exempt from these conferences? Military is exempt from climate talks.
So now you might be thinking, wait, John, no, you cut off the video. Why didn't you let Nancy Pelosi respond? Well, because she didn't. And she eventually did, and we will play that. But notably, that was a question to Nancy Pelosi, and Nancy Pelosi walked away from the podium, and some representative went up, and he was saying, "You know, no, totally, like I care about climate change and we're talking to the military, but I don't think it's inconsistent to say that if the military is polluting more than so many countries, that doesn't mean we take this seriously." And so that guy, Frank, whatever, he was the shield that was thrown in front of Speaker Pelosi so that she wouldn't have to immediately respond to that. But it was a great question, a great point by Abby Martin. Jer, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's okay. So this highlights something that many people probably don't know. And also how people like Nancy Pelosi operate. So you're this lib and you're talking about climate change, but when someone confronts you with a big driver of what you say you're concerned about, and will you do something about it? Where does she go? Stage left. You know, that's the perfect illustration of where Democrats work. They'll say enough they can to people, and she somehow accidentally got Abby Martin in front of a microphone because she wanted a woman, and she got the wrong woman for her own taste. And look what happens now. But again, there's so many harkens back to earlier stories. How much will this be on MSNBC? How much will this be on CNN? How much will this be on Fox? Now, Fox could possibly do it because they're upset and they want to get Nancy Pelosi. But the downside is it's such a lib policy. There's so many things they could attack establishment Democrats for on conservative media, but they don't because they'll be promoting something that can actually help people.
My guess would be not at all. But if you see them talking about it on any of these networks and you're watching this, please let me know. Now, eventually, after the human shield was thrown in front of Nancy Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi eventually did respond. And here is what she had to say.
And may I just add that the national security advisors all tell us that the climate crisis is a national security matter. It is, of course, a health matter for our children, the water they drink, the air they breathe, etc. It is a jobs issue between clean technologies being the future of our workforce and the training for all of that. It is a national security issue because of the all of the conditions that climate crisis produces. I won't go into all of them, but they do are cause for migration, conflict over habitat and resources, and again, a security challenge.
What was that? What was that? What? So you were asked, why is it that we don't consider the emissions impact of the Pentagon when talking about this, when they are a bigger player than so many actual countries? And Nancy Pelosi says, oh, well, I have a point to make about that. Climate change is bad and it's a national security risk and it's bad for your health and it's bad in other ways. Those aren't your points. Those are Abby Martin's points. Those are our points. We know it's bad. That's why we're talking to you. And you are distracting from the question, which is, okay, so if it's really bad, shouldn't we consider the emissions of the Pentagon? But she didn't get to it. That just wasn't a part of that.
No, the Pentagon, you know, the Pentagon is putting their cans, their bottles, and their paper in its appropriate recycling bins. That's what they're doing. So we gotta make sure that
seriously. That
was such an elementary response. It's one of those things where like a fifth grader may be like, oh man, I totally forgot my report. Hey Jim, would you write? National security people say that this is tough. Like that was the worst I've ever seen her look unprepared and not know what to say. Cause yeah. This is one of those things that they never expected anyone to ask. Yeah, so keep asking.
If I could sum up what Nancy Pelosi said, I will quote one of my favorites. Blah, blah, blah. We get it. We understand that it's bad. We don't need you to tell us that it's bad. We need you to finally say what the hell you're gonna do about it. Because it is bad. The Pentagon produced 59 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions just in 2017. Netta Crawford of Boston University said, if it were a country, it would have been the world's 55th largest greenhouse gas emitter by itself. Through the course of not even the entirety of our conflicts in the Middle East and the surrounding regions, the Pentagon produced about 400 million metric tons. And by the way, they estimate that about 70% of that is moving troops and weapons, mostly due to the burning of jet and diesel fuel. So I have an idea, a bold idea to cut our emissions. Stop moving weapons and troops to places they don't need to be. And by the way, I'm not a scholar. I haven't looked into this. I think there might be other benefits other than just emissions reductions if you stop sending our troops all around the world.
No way.
I think that there might be some other. It's a hypothesis. We'll look into it.
It's obvious you have not looked into it and you're not a scholar on it.
I'm not. I'm definitely not. I actually applied to Boston University. Got waitlisted. I was just denied. No, they just denied me. I was waitlisted to BC. Not accepted into either. I want to be very clear about that. They did not want me. Anyway, okay. With that, we do have to take our second break. There is so much more we got to talk about. Our next block, we got a bunch of weirdos for you. So stay tuned. That's coming up after this. Okay, what are we going to talk about? Oh, dear God. It's about to get weird up in here. Let's do this. This has not been a great year for MAGA prisoners, people who are currently being held behind bars because they just love Donald Trump and his movement too much. And so we've got one guy. He has found a way to cope with this, and it involves making comic strips of him and R. Kelly. Now, that's the fun part. The less fun part is why he's in jail. So this is Brendan Hunt, a 37-year-old who once worked as a New York State Office of Court Administration clerk and whose father served as a judge in Queens, was arrested by the FBI back on January 19th, the day before inauguration. In June, a jury found him guilty of making a series of threats to kill members of Congress following President Joe Biden's victory last November. Now, you probably would ask, why would someone be so angry about the results of the election that they'd want to kill people? Nobody knows. There's no, we can't, we have no information to base that on. But while he was being detained in a federal jail in Brooklyn, he shared a cell with R. Kelly. He was actually in jail with R. Kelly. And so as like a way of showing that he has become a far different man than the one who went into the criminal justice system like 3 months earlier, he's released these comics. And the comics feature him and R. Kelly. I mean, I guess if you have a celebrity cameo you can use, you'll use it. Here it is. It's called King Sized Annual Edition Prison Comics. And it involves him getting fit with R. Kelly. And I swear to God, this is true. They're doing yoga, reading from Yoga 101. And I Believe I Can Fly is playing in the background. Now, you might have another follow-up question. Wait, what are you talking about playing in the background? It's a comic. He drew it in the background with notes. They're doing yoga to I Believe I Can Fly. You can see it there in the middle bottom part as they're both doing, I'm gonna say, a sort of warrior pose. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of this as a legal strategy for getting released from prison, JR, but it's bold.
Is that the plan?
They want to show that he's different, that he's changed, that now he's centered, he's found yoga, he's found a positive role model in R. Kelly. But anyway, this is what he's got.
Well, so if anything else, he's just exhibiting his drawing skills here, but it's so weird. So somebody gets a cellmate with R. Kelly, who has been raping and assaulting and doing horrible things with underage girls for a very long time. And instead of saying, hey, I'd like a transfer, I'm not sure if you came to ask for that. But instead it's like, this is good. You know, I have a good idea. Let me draw some comics of me and R. Kelly, because that'll get me out. And you know what? Honestly, as I say it, maybe it is a good idea. The upside down version of our justice system, you can't underestimate what they'll consider as a good reason for something like this. Yeah, or I mean, is he going to continue? Is this going to become a strip? Is he going to get famous? Is he going to get Insta famous, TikTok?
We'll see. We'll see if he ends up on a Patreon or something. Apparently it was a warrior pose. So credit to John Adirola for correctly doing that. Anyway, yes, they had said that in a legal motion filed by his attorney, they capture something more profound about the humanizing communality that can be found even in the most dehumanizing conditions. So that's good. That's good. So this is his output, his creative output. And I have to say, I like it more than his previous creative output. Like for instance, this was what he wrote on December 6th on Facebook. Trump, we want actual revenge on Democrats, meaning we want you to hold a public execution of Pelosi, AOC, Schumer, etc. And if you don't do it, the citizenry will. We're not voting in another rigged election. Start up the firing squads, mow down these commies, and let's take America back. I like the new stuff with the yoga more. You know, it's just more calming. Maybe it's a fall thing. I just want to drink some chai and like see R. Kelly doing a warrior pose rather than mowing down the commies.
It's so it's therapeutic, John. And that's and it sounds like I'm joking, but it is for them. Violence and imagery of violence and imagining how much you're going to kill folks that you disagree with politically gets them like going. It's their yoga. It's their energy. And it's such an upside down world. But you know, and again, he's getting popularity for this. I'm not sure the degree. But look, this is where we are. I can't take this anymore.
Look, you can say whatever you want. He says he only did that because of literally a few bong rips. I don't know what that has to do with wanting to mow down the commies. I don't know. He'd apparently been studying white supremacist and anti-Semitic symbols, propaganda, and ideology in the months leading up to the election. He read Mein Kampf, the Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion, going to the Daily Stormer. He read the Manifesto of Dylann Roof. Okay, well, you know, balance that against the R. Kelly yoga. Honestly, the R. Kelly yoga isn't the worst thing on that list, but it's not the best either. Anyway, also the QAnon shaman, he wants to get out of jail. He's going a different tactic, not with the yoga stuff. So by the way, he's the one who had the horns and the fur and all that. So he wrote in a 23-page sentencing memo, there was a quote where he put, my mama always said, you've got to put the past behind you before you can move on. That is a quote from Forrest Gump, which he misspelled. But I get it, it's confusing, the one R, two R thing. So I don't understand the Forrest Gump thing as a defense either. I don't know what is going on with the defense of these people, but they're moving in some weird directions and I don't know that it's necessarily gonna work.
They're clowns, bottom line.
They're clowns.
Clowns do clown things.
Yeah, they do. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, they're not gonna spend the rest of their life in jail or anything like that. Those that didn't try to kill cops with their bare hands. But you gotta put your behind in your past, Pumbaa, Blue Lizard Gut says. That's true, I would've gone with that. I would've spelled it Poomba, but I would've gone in that direction. Anyway, we are running very low on time with this hour. So why don't we jump ahead to our last topic, a little update on something we talked about earlier in this week. You know what, actually, give me 1 second. I am going to open up this because I saw a last minute update to this story. Okay, with that, let's talk about this. Despite some Bill Maher saying that the pandemic's over, it's not over and still 12 to 1300 people are dying every day. But there are things that are changing and that is, where the people are dying and who tends to be dying. I mean, people of all sorts are dying. But they found recently an analysis of these deaths that the partisan gap in COVID deaths has been increasing. So this gap accelerated its fastest rate yet in October, the last month that we have full data for. Coming up to 25 COVID deaths per 100,000 residents in counties where Trump won more than 60% of the vote. So strong red districts versus 7.8 in those where Biden did the same. So it is more than 3 times gap there in deaths. And it's not surprising to find out why. I hope that Aaron Rodgers is watching this because a late October poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation's COVID-19 vaccine monitor found that 39% of Republican adults remain unvaccinated, 4 times the rate of Democrats. So 4 times less vaccination, 3 times more death. Again, I'm not an expert, JR. Maybe there's something there.
Well, I mean, as long as people who would like to live or not get sick and have long COVID issues the rest of their life, they'll pay attention to things like this. So the best you can do is put this kind of information out. But the problem now is since it becomes along partisan lines, people will dig themselves into their partisanship. So, pinning people who are unvaccinated or believe Donald Trump is God will see this stuff and go, yeah, that's us. Because again, I've said this so many times. They've somehow convinced their followers to attach their political ideology to their identity. Like you can't let go of it. If it's something you believe in, then everything that happens with it, you got to take it to death. Like that is you. If you're now a COVID denier, if you're now a vaccine anti-vaxxer, you can't ever change your mind. There's no information available that will allow you to switch.
Yeah, and you are purer the more damage you're willing to do to yourself. It's like a constant martyr thing. It is, that's what, when people talk about death cults, that's what it is. It's the people who are willing to put their literal lives and livelihood and health on the line are the best people. And that's what they're doing here. By the way, the update, so I just go to twitter.com/Johnny Rolla. I just tweeted this link. Unvaccinated Texans, according to the Washington Post, were 40 times as likely to die of COVID as those who are fully vaccinated across 2021. So throughout this year, 40 times as likely, but the other side refuses to admit that there is literally any difference. It's 40 times and they don't think it's 5%. Okay, yeah, do your research. Talk to what do you call it? That podcaster, Joe Rogan. Oh, I forgot his name for a minute. That was a good one. Anyway, talk to Joe Rogan, okay? And then you can weigh that against the data that shows you're 40 times more likely to die. Anyway, you can see it mapped out across states, the vaccination rate versus the vote share. The red states just aren't getting vaccinated. The daily COVID deaths it's getting worse and worse. It's always been bad, but look at how it is changing in recent months. And that is going to get worse. And why not? Fox has been demonizing vaccination even more. Its opinion programming, 92% of its segments about vaccination undermine the effort, 92%. Any super fast comment, JR?
No, just as expected. This is what's gonna happen. It's gonna continue to happen. Let's see how many people, families are broken over this.
100%. And we're just covering this to try to stop people from dying. And especially now, try to stop conservatives from dying because they're the ones that are being culled by this insane thing that the right is doing. Okay, if you're watching on Twitch and YouTube, members app, we got more coming for you. Short break, we'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.